Right. So we're diving into this case, Yates v. State, and it's a bit of a wild one. We've got a drug deal, counterfeit money, a chase ensues, and then tragically, a stray bullet takes a life, which ultimately leads to a felony murder conviction. I mean, you can
Okay.
practically see the Law and Order intro playing, right?
Yeah, it d definitely has all the makings of a legal thriller. But what makes Yates v. State so interesting for us is that it really digs into some fundamental principles of criminal law, evidence, how appeals work, the whole nine yards.
It's like a crash course in some pretty important legal topics.
Exactly.
And for this deep dive, we've got a pretty comprehensive set of materials. We've got a detailed case brief, a standard brief, and even some background guidance specifically for this podcast, all focused on Yates v. State. So, what we really want to do is break down the key legal questions at the heart of this case, especially looking at hearsay evidence, how the felony murder rule works in Maryland, and then how appellate courts actually go about reviewing trial decisions. You know, stuff that's particularly relevant for, well, anyone in law school or thinking about the legal field.
Makes sense.
So, where should we start? I guess the testimony of Detective Hinton seems like a good jumping-off point. It seems like that's where a lot of these legal issues start to come up.
Right. Detective Hinton testified that Jagged, one of the people involved, told him that Yates had said, quote, "I popped that nigga," after the shooting happened. And this statement, this quote, was actually allowed as evidence in the trial, even though Yates's lawyers objected to it.
Okay, so that's pretty significant. But why? What makes that statement, what the detective said, so legally questionable?
Well, this is where we get into the concept of hearsay. Hearsay is basically an out-of-court statement, something said outside the courtroom, that's offered in court as evidence to prove that whatever's in that statement is actually true. So in this case, the detective's saying what Jag told him about what Yates supposedly said. And they're using this to prove that Yates confessed to the shooting, but the problem is, Yates wasn't under oath when he supposedly said it, couldn't be cross-examined. It's like secondhand information, right?
It's like, yeah, you're relying on someone else's word for what was said, and you can't
Yeah.
really test whether it's accurate or not.
Exactly. So, given that our materials mention something called Rule 801, this seems like a pretty clear case of what's called inadmissible hearsay, meaning it shouldn't be allowed as evidence unless there's a specific exception.
Right.
Yeah.
So then, how did this testimony end up being allowed in the trial, especially since there were objections? It seems like a pretty big misstep.
Well, Yates' lawyers did object, arguing it was hearsay. And here's the interesting part. Even the state, the prosecution, later admitted during the appeal that allowing that testimony was a mistake. They acknowledged it shouldn't have been allowed in.
Okay, so both sides agreed a mistake was made. But Yates was still found guilty, and the conviction was upheld. How does that work? How can a mistake be made, but the result still stands?
That's where the difference between harmless error and structural error comes in. A structural error is like a major flaw in the trial itself, something that affects the whole process and usually means an automatic reversal, like starting over. But a harmless error means, yeah, a mistake happened, but it didn't really change the outcome of the trial. And in Yates's case, they decided this hearsay thing was a harmless error.
So harmless error is like it was a mistake, but not a game changer. So how did the court decide that this hearsay evidence, while wrongly admitted, didn't ultimately affect the verdict?
They relied heavily on what's called the cumulative evidence doctrine. They pointed out that there were two other witnesses, Jagged himself and another guy named Griffin, who also testified that Yates admitted to shooting the gun. Jagged even said he saw Yates point and fire the gun. So basically, even without that detective's testimony, there was other evidence presented to the jury that said the same thing.
Right, so it's like the jury got the same information, the same idea from other more legitimate sources.
That's the idea. And the court even specifically said the hearsay was, quote, cumulative of other evidence, so the conviction stood.
Got it. So it wasn't that the hearsay was okay, it's that it didn't matter in the end because there was other strong evidence pointing in the same direction. It's really important to understand this, especially for anyone going into law. It's crucial to object to hearsay, but you also have to consider the bigger picture, like what other evidence is out there? Will this one piece of hearsay really make or break the case on appeal?
Exactly. It's a good reminder that trial strategy involves thinking several steps ahead.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now let's shift gears a bit and talk about the felony murder charge. So, Yates was convicted of second-degree felony murder. What does that even mean in Maryland?
Right. So in Maryland, second-degree felony murder is a bit broader than in some other places. It's not limited to just a specific list of underlying felonies.
Meaning, Any felony could potentially lead to a felony murder charge if someone dies.
Potentially, yes. And in Yates's case, the underlying felony was drug distribution. And this is where this whole idea of the continuous transaction theory comes into play.
Okay, continuous transaction theory. That sounds complicated.
Yeah, it basically means that if a death happens during a continuous series of events that are connected to a felony, even if it's not during the felony itself, you could still be charged with felony murder.
So it's not just about what happens while you're actively committing the felony, but also about the chain of events that it sets off.
Yeah, and in this case, even though the drug deal itself might have been considered over when Kohler ran off with the fake money, Yates chasing after him, which led to the shooting, was seen as part of the same continuous transaction. So the court's saying the original felony and drug deal set this whole thing in motion.
That makes sense, but it still seems a little tricky. Like, where do you draw the line? The drug deal was technically over, right?
Right, and that's a common question, but the courts look at the whole picture. Did the felony start the chain reaction? Was there a close connection in time and place? Was there a direct link between the felony and the death? And in this case, they decided, yeah, all those things were true.
So it's not about the exact moment the felony ends, but more about the cause and effect, the domino effect that it creates.
Exactly. And this continuous transaction idea is really important to understand because it shows how broad the felony murder rule can be.
It's definitely a key concept in criminal law.
Absolutely. Now, moving on to the last big point, the jury instructions. Apparently, the instructions given during the trial were the standard ones used in Maryland.
So that's generally a good thing, right? Standard instructions are meant to be legally sound, carefully thought out.
You'd think so, right? That's the idea behind them. But Yates's appeal brought up this thing called plain error review, and that's related to the instructions.
Okay, plain error. We talked about harmless and structural errors earlier. Where does plain error fit in?
So plain error review is what appellate courts do when there's a mistake in the trial, but no one objected to it at the time. And they only use it for really, really serious errors that basically made the whole trial unfair. It's a very high bar to clear.
So even if the instructions weren't perfect, if the defense didn't point it out during the trial, the appeals court is only going to step in if it was a truly egregious mistake. Something that fundamentally messed up the fairness of the trial.
Exactly. And there's a discussion point here. Should appellate courts always just accept these standard instructions as perfect during this plain error review?
Right. Just because they're standard doesn't mean they're flawless.
Exactly. And some people argue they should be scrutinized more. But in reality, courts are very hesitant to find plain error, especially when standard instructions were used. Unless the mistake is so huge that it clearly denied the defendant a fair trial, they're usually going to defer to those standard instructions. In fact, our standard brief actually quotes the standard, and it says plain error review is for errors that are, quote, compelling, extraordinary, exceptional, or fundamental to assure the defendant a fair trial.
Wow, that's a pretty high standard.
It is.
So in Yates' case, the appeals court basically said, look, these are the standard instructions. We don't see anything fundamentally unfair here that would make us overturn the conviction, especially since no one objected at the time.
Right, which also highlights how important it is to have a good lawyer during the trial who will raise objections and make sure things are done properly.
Absolutely. It's a reminder that appeals are important, but the real battle is fought in the trial court. So let's recap the key takeaways from Yates v. State. For practicing lawyers, what are the big things they should be thinking about?
Well, first and foremost, you've got to make timely and specific objections, especially when it comes to hearsay evidence. Second, even if you object successfully, you have to think about the cumulative effect of other evidence. If the same information gets in through other means, that original error might not matter on appeal. And when it comes to felony murder, you have to understand how broad it can be, especially with this continuous transaction idea. It's not just about the felony itself. It's about the chain of events it sets in motion.
And for all the law students out there, what should they take away from this case?
Well, this case is a great example of how appeals work in practice, how courts look at errors made during trial. And it also highlights some really important concepts like hearsay, the felony murder rule, standards of review, harmless error, plain error. Pay attention to these concepts in your classes, especially in evidence, criminal law, and appellate procedure.
And the big thing to remember is that appellate courts often focus on whether the outcome of the trial would have been different if the error hadn't happened.
That's a great point.
Okay, so just to sum up the main points of the case, the court agreed that the detective's hearsay testimony was a mistake, but they said it was a harmless error because the jury heard the same information from other sources. They also upheld the felony murder conviction based on that continuous transaction theory, saying the shooting was a direct result of the drug deal, even though it happened after the deal went bad. And finally, they didn't find any plain error in the jury instructions, partly because they were the standard instructions used in Maryland.
Yep, that's a great summary of the key holdings in Yates v. State.
So we've really unpacked a lot here. Mm-hmm. We've seen how tricky the hearsay rule can be, how the felony murder rule can have a surprisingly wide reach, and how appellate courts make decisions about errors during trial.
It's a lot to consider, but it all boils down to the same fundamental question. How do we balance the need for justice with the right to a fair trial? And Yates v. State gives us a lot to think about in that regard.
It definitely does. And for our listeners, here's something to ponder. Where do you draw the line between upholding strict rules of evidence and holding people accountable when someone dies during a crime? This continuous transaction test is one way to approach that. But does it strike the right balance? Does it go too far, or does it not go far enough? It's a question that gets to the heart of our justice system, and it's something worth thinking about as you continue learning about the law.
It certainly is.
Well, on that note, I think we've covered a lot of ground today.
We have. It's been a great discussion.
And until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.